Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we talk long and lovingly all about our favorite superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hey, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And if you want to send us emails, you can do that to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. So emails to Gmail. That's confusing. We're on Facebook at the usual way things are on Facebook. And there's a blog which has stuff about our show, which is mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And all our many, many, many episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com in total.
Correct. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. And you can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, who is Wilfred, and he's at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, Comicosity is a fabulous site for comic information and news and reviews and stuff and nothing else. But I like to go there every week and look at the Hot Five, because before the comics come out every week, they do a Hot Five, which is done by John Ernanpooch, and it's his the ones that he thinks are hot this week or that week. And so I'm just looking through, and he's tipped Doomsday Clock number 6. Yeah, and he's got The Flash 51, which has big deals for The Flash. Infinity Wars Prime. So it's not just one war, it's multiple wars now.
Oh dear.
So that's gone on heavy. Justice League Dark number 1's out this week. So a new Justice League title with Wonder Woman leading her own freaky team of freaks.
Yeah.
And what's the other one? Mr. and Mrs. X.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that the spin out of X-Men Gold? I think it's Rogue and Gambit.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
And a new Image one called The New World by Alice Cott and Trad Moore. I'm not going to read that. I don't like Alice Cott.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, Wonder Woman. Steve Orlando is starting his Wonder Woman run.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
That should be good.
And then there's X-Men Grand Design Second Genesis number 1. So that's Ed Piskor doing his more X-Men stuff. I saw Ed Piskor at HeroesCon.
Oh.
Just to name drop some names that I dropped.
Did you go to HeroesCon?
I did, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Anyway.
Anyway, how was your week in comics you've read and other fun stuff been, Paul?
Oh, I could tell you about. I've been setting up my man cave a bit. With one of the children out of the house. My wife said, "Why don't you take over that room? We'll get rid of the spare bed in it, and you can turn it into a man cave."
Lucky, God.
And I think I'm 30% turned it into a man cave, and 70% turned it into a place where I don't know where to put things. So, so it has extra chairs and a desk and a table and things like that that I don't really need or want. But there is a corner which has two armchairs in it, and it has a display cabinet filled with toys and Lego and cool things like that. And last weekend my wife bought me a bookcase. So I've got a new bookcase in there, which was a strategic move by her part, because I have moved most of the books that were in the bedroom out into this man cave now. And right. She has extended her Funko Pop display onto the other shelves, because she's a little bit out of control. But I'm very proud of her. So, anyway.
It almost sounds like you're reluctantly encouraging her.
Well.
Almost.
Yeah. I mean, when your wife collects things, it makes it easier when you collect things. So
this is true. Yes. Yeah. Yes. What's good for the Hicks is good for the Mrs. Hicks or something.
And comic-wise, what did I read that was cool? Oh, I read some Hellboy. I read Hellboy. It's not really Hellboy. I read BPRD 1947, which was...
Oh, okay.
Spooky stuff with... Joshua Dysart writing it with Mike Mignola and Gabriel Barr and Fabio Moon on art, which was pretty special.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so cool. Enjoyed that. I haven't read any of... I haven't been buying them lately, but I found that one in Heroes Con for $5 for the trade. So I was like,
oh.
Beauty, score.
Sorry, did you go to Heroes Con? Right.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you about it sometime.
Okay, cool.
What about you, Mike? Sorry, I'm hogging the show.
I've actually read some comics since we last spoke. A bit of Saga, some of Animosity, getting caught up on some Wicked and Divine stuff. So not a huge bit of reading, but the pile sits there taunting me, as it ever does. But, you know, made a bit of a dent in it, you know. Just
cool.
Finding myself a bit time poor when it comes to comics.
Yes.
I guess I also did read Zero Hour, kind of, because I had to provide my fair/kind of generous score for it for DCOCD, but we won't get into that here.
Brutal. Brutal.
Okay, yes, it was brutal. It was brutal. I was not a fan of Zero Hour, but I read it. I did it for the fans. You're all very welcome. So, yes. Anyway, shall we move along and go and have a look at what might possibly be happening down on Durrington Way?
No.
Okay.
We have a segment called Doom News now. Doom News.
You don't want to call it News Patrol?
Damn it, that's better. Garvey, you've done it again, you bastard. Let's go check on News Patrol.
Hooray!
Okay, so if we go on News Patrol, what we find is that I have had word about the TV show from someone in the know.
Ooh.
So Michael Bailey has advised that the Doom Patrol show will be filmed about an hour north of him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I presume that wherever he goes, they will film an hour north of him. So if he actually tried to visit the set, it would just keep moving north and he would never get to see it.
An hour north.
Yeah,
right.
So, anyway. I think that's how it works with Michael Bailey. Michael Bailey is a podcaster, for those who don't know, and a bit of a Superman geek fan.
A little bit.
And, you know, comics and stuff. And he podcasts like a beast. Beast of a podcaster, they say. But, so he lives in Georgia, Atlanta. So I believe it's going to be filmed somewhere near there. Unless he moves.
And then it will relocate an hour north of him.
Yeah, and shout out to Michael for someone bumped into him in the street and he was wearing his Superman shirt and they asked him if he knew anything about the Doom Patrol and he recommended our show to them. So,
Michael.
Thanks, Michael. And if the person who was recommended that recommendation is listening, welcome. Hello.
Hello. Leave us an iTunes review and you can get a pretty snazzy postcard.
Yeah, unless it's a bad review. No, we'll take what we get. Yes, but in other big Doom Patrol news, the solicitations for the October DC Comics dropped today, and there's a Doom Patrol comic coming out in the midst of it, and it's not Volume 6, so which would have been the most surprising thing. But
true, yes.
Yeah, Craig R. McD on Twitter, he pointed this out to us. And it's Scooby-Doo Team Up number 43, which has the Doom Patrol meeting the Scooby-Doo team. So, and it's written by Sholly Fish and has art and cover by Dario Brizzola. I think he's from Japan. And this is what it's about. It says, Scooby and the gang have teamed up with dozens of superheroes to face some of the world's weirdest menaces. But the shoe's on the other robotic foot when they have to team up with the world's strangest heroes, the Doom Patrol. And if their heroes make Scooby and Shaggy nervous, just wait until they meet the Doom Patrol's enemies. So that's on sale the 24th of October, 2018.
We will definitely have to cover that one.
Yeah, I think so. That will warrant a trip to the comic shop or Comicosity or no, Comixology.
Yes.
So, we'll be in that. So,
cool. Hell yeah. Yeah. If that's the only other new issue we get of a Doom Patrol comic this year, we kind of have to.
I think so. That will reset the Doom Clock. Speaking of which, is that ticking?
It is ticking. And speaking of the Doom Clock, yes, it is the Doom Clock.
What?
So, yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it has been 15 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book was in our hot little hands. That being issue 11 of volume 6, the lead into Milk Wars, which we discussed back in episode 122. Issue 12 is currently missing in action, and we have no sign of any sort of release date at this stage. But this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale July 26th of 1988, with the cover date of November of that year, for US $1-y-do, was issue 14 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 from Paul Kupperberg, Eric Larson, Jim Sanders III, Johnny Workman Jr., Michelle Wolfman, and Robert Greenberger. This story was titled Order and Doom and had Power Girl seeking the Patrol's help in her battle against the demon Pythia. However, the fight turned fatal and all seemed lost until a young girl named Dorothy Spinner came to the rescue. Key issue for fans of the Ape-Faced Girl. We discussed this issue and issue 13, which had the first part of the story, back in episode 53 from April of 2016.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Good grief.
Feeling so old. In the episode was appropriately titled Order, Chaos, Doom, and Butts. something to do with Power Girl, maybe. But yes, that was an issue where it turned sideways when they went into Pythia's demon dimension. Pythia got massive, and Dorothy came up with a kind of weird way to fight Pythia off. Something about white rocks. Anyway, that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Excellent.
In late 1984, Marvel's direct sales manager said in a crowded meeting of comic retailers, "Let's be honest, Secret Wars was crap, right? But did it sell?" The room exploded with applause. Well, get ready for Secret Wars Series 2.
Beginning in 2018, Pulp to Pixel's Marvel superhero Secret Wars and Beyond will do the unthinkable, Secret Wars 2. We'll take a detailed look at the event, the tie-ins, the new characters, and we will attempt to answer one of the largest questions in the history of the Marvel Universe. What the heck was Jim Shooter thinking? No, seriously, what was Jim Shooter thinking? Well, you can find out at the Pulp to Pixel podcast network, where you can subscribe to all of our amazing shows, or just to Secret Wars and Beyond itself, as it is now in its own omnipotent feed. Secret Wars 2 and Beyond, a Pulp to Pixel podcast production.
You'll believe an omnipotent being can use the restroom.
And now it's time for the segment of the show where we take a deeper dive into Doom Patrol history, and we call this segment Doomsplaining. And this week we are returning to some people's favorite run. I don't know whose favorite run this would be.
I've never heard that.
But I'm trying to be positive. It's volume 4, The Burn Run. We are looking at issues 11 and 12 of this volume. And Paul, please tell us all about issue 11.
Issue 11 has Niles Calder on the cover in a crucifix pose against a skull-faced dude, and the rest of the Doom Patrol seem to be dancing around. Are they dancing? I don't know. They're standing. It's a whole pin-up.
I think they're meant to look like, oh, we're in shock, but we want to help. Oh, help him. No, stop. Yeah, it's a bit confusing.
Yeah. And it's a cover by John Byrne. And inside the comic, well, it's written by John Byrne as well, coincidentally. Inked by Doug Hazelwood, lettered by Jared K. Fletcher, coloured by Alex Blayart, and edited by Mike Carlin, who I think was just letting John Byrne do whatever he wanted at this point. and it is cover dated June 2005, but in reality it actually came out on the 27th of April 2005, and it had a cover price of $2.50, which is way too much for this. Spoil what's inside, but let's go. Okay. So, previously in the Doom Patrol, the team have split up everywhere after their encounter with some unnamed villain with vague motivation, and everyone handles the separation in different ways. For instance, Vortex, the blue guy who generates vortexes, and Grunt, the four-armed gorilla, and Nudge, now known as Me Sun, the teenage psycho telekineticist, whatever she is, are evading the police and some carnies between flashbacks about how the latter two came to meet. That's Nudge and Grunt, for those of you who lost track of my sentence, came to meet. This involves a crazy scientist lady who kidnapped some boy called Timmy Butcher and removed his brain and then bunged it in the body of a four-armed gorilla that she'd whipped up with for for reasons. And Mi-Sun flashes back to when she met with some friends and they had a seance and did some drugs for some reason. And new mental powers drew her to the circus, where the gorilla was now a prisoner, and she hung out with him using her powers to nudge the leader of the Doom Patrol to take her and the gorilla, Grunt, off to join the Doom Patrol. So that's, you know, that's a good little story. And back, not in the flashback, the police catch up with them in a high-rise unit, and Grunt is blasted point-blank by a shotgun out the window, plummeting to certain death if he's not already dead from the shooting. Anyway, meanwhile, Larry Trainer, Negative Man, became separated from his energy being and died, but not quite fully enough to be completely dead. That sounds a bit like from The Princess Bride again. And the rest of the team got involved with a private train crash from Stag Industries, which spilled out Rex Mason as a character called Metamorpho, and you just pretend you've never heard of this character before in the DC Universe, even though he's been around since the 60s or 50s, I don't know.
And
John Byrne wants you to treat this as a new appearance, which doesn't work. And, the Chief builds a containment suit for Rex Metamorpho so he can stop attacking people and hang out with his wife, Sapphire Stag, or Mason. Stag slash Mason. I don't know. Anyway, that's what happened before.
Wow.
But now in the Doom Patrol. The Chief is having a fancy tech-assisted bath when he experiences a nightmare where a tribal shaman takes him prisoner and then goes all Kathy Bates on his legs with a giant hammer. His scream brings his robot manservant A-27 to his side to pull him out of the bath and into the metal exoskeleton that enables him to walk and wave his arms around and stuff like that. We see the police attack Grunt once again in flashback, so going backwards into the previous issue, I don't know why, in case we'd forgotten it or fallen asleep in the last issue. Well, some might have fallen asleep. Maybe it's some sort of merciful mental saving role that John Byrne wants us to do. Yeah. Anyway, the police immediately discuss the weird physics of the shooting, like the lack of recoil on the shotgun, etc., which is a very clever way for John Byrne to let us know that something's up with what happened. And then Nudge explains to the police that she shoved Grunt out the window with her powers and then slowed the shotgun pellets, and she is now allowing this four-armed gorilla to float gently to the street.
Right.
The police aren't very impressed with that, and they still want to capture him. But back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, because we're going to jump around a bit, Rex Mason, or Metamorpho, and Sapphire Regular Woman Stag are talking about the possible use of the prison base. So, you know, is it in use? Is it? Or maybe there's prisoners? Who knows? And it could perhaps be a plot point for later. Elsewhere in the base, Niles is checking on Larry when the shaman from his nightmare appears. Who could see this coming? And he levitates him around the place and snaps his arm bone with his mystical powers. Meanwhile, Nudge and Vortex are fleeing the cops again and using her tele-whatever powers to fly. But her powers start to fade and they're plummeting to certain death. So again, with a certain death, but we're kind of hip to it now, so it's not much of a surprise when an embiggened Rita catches the young freaks. And Cliff tries to calm Grunt down because he's on the street getting attacked by cops, but their struggle triggers it doesn't triggle anything, the worst of all possible outcomes, another flashback. So the evil scientist and the assistant have the freshly Frankenstein four-armed gorilla locked up till too much cattle prodding causes Grunt to snap, grabbing the assistant, then the keys, then unlocking and finally beating the scientist lady to death, then fleeing only to be reported to the police and then run down by carnies who have invested in a police scanner in case a four-armed gorilla ever shows up in the world so they can capture it. That's the sort of thing that circuses do all the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Then we then head back to the present day, or the present part of the comic, where Mi-Sun and the other members of the Doom Patrol, plus a whole bunch of police officers, who are all now chummy, have dropped in on Mr. and Mrs. Butcher, or however you say their name, to explain that their son, Timmy, isn't actually a missing runaway. He's actually just had his brain transplanted in the body of this freaky four-armed gorilla. So that must be a huge relief for them.
Yes, for sure.
She then explains how this happened, and again with the teenage angst and the seance and the drugs and the circus and the rest of the story again. So it's good to have another flashback of a flashback that we've already had.
Mm-hmm.
And Rita is horrified that Mi-Sun may have gotten her astounding mental powers through drug abuse, but Mi-Sun reassures her that it was it started with her period, a trope that we're very familiar with in the Doom Patrol. That
mm-hmm.
yeah. you know, I was very sad that that trope was gone for good, but it's good that it's back in volume four.
Yeah.
I mean, periods are to the Doom Patrol what radiation is to the Marvel Universe.
Come on now, it's like, what, for a second time it's been used?
Yeah.
But still.
To be fair, it got used over and over again, though.
Yeah.
With Dorothy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. The comic's still going, good grief.
Whoops.
Meanwhile, back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, Rex hears the alarm and runs to investigate, leaving Sapphire to be grabbed by some mysterious pink stretchy arms. And Rex sees the Shaman levitating the chief and attacks with his goo powers, only to be hit by an invisible shield. After the Shaman Tumbala subdues Rex, he gets back to his stated goal of crushing the chief's bones to dust. Well, that was quite a story.
It was. Do you think there were enough flashbacks in it, though?
Well, it really eased off on the flashbacks, though I was impressed that two of the flashbacks were to things that we'd already seen in flashback in a previous issue.
Yeah. So that issue kind of happened. You summed it up pretty well. It's just, I don't know. It's just weird. And, like, not in a good way, you know?
It's weird in a bad way. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. It's like the flashbacks are just, they just interrupt the flow of the story. And, I don't know. It's just, I got to say, I kind of like the art in this one. It's good. It's very burn art. It's like, get over the flashbacks, you know? Just progress the main storyline. How many times do we need to see, I hate correcting you on this, but it's Henry Boucher, not Timmy Boucher.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sure all the Burn fans will be up in arms and flood our mailbox.
Someone's just quit the podcast in disgust. I can't believe Flanger got that wrong.
Hashtag curse you, Flanger. So, yeah, it's just, I'm so tired of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
In Burns Run. It's like every issue has a flashback.
And it's as if it's written by someone who has seen humans and, you know, seen people with emotions, but doesn't really get it and wants to try and say, okay, this is how people interact and this is, you know, what people are like when they're sad and happy and it rings false.
Actually, I almost like the next issue slightly better than this issue, but this issue,
Well, what a beautiful opportunity to take us into the next one then, Mark.
Oh, yes, what a beautiful segue. It hasn't been made awkward at all. Volume 4, issue 12, How to Kill a Ghost. Cover date of July 2005, but going on sale May 25th of that year. Again, for $2.50. Again, allegedly edited by Mike Carlin. Written and penciled by John Byrne. Inks by Doug Hazelwood. Letters by Jared K. Fletcher. Colors by Alex Blount. And the cover has Larry Traynor bandaging up his head. And we can see Robot Man and Rita Farr sort of gasping in the reflection of his goggles. So he's ditched the GIMP mask.
Yeah,
finally. I'm sure Byrne got lots of fan mail saying, ditch the GIMP mask, John. And he went, sure, or something. Anyway, fantastic news, everyone. Remember those mutant bad guys that Patrol were holding prisoner in the HQ that we last saw back in issue 2 of this run, which we covered in episode 109 from October of 2017? Remember those guys?
Vaguely.
Vaguely? The guys that managed to escape when they got possessed by interdimensional vampires from the 10th Circle?
No.
No?
No, I don't remember that.
You don't remember them? Ah, that's a shame. Because, yes, those guys, they're back. Well, they're back, and it appears to Metamorpho, Sapphire, and us readers that Tumbala has freed them in exchange for them being his muscle as he attacks the chief and the headquarters. And elsewhere in DBHQ, Niles Calder, our beloved chief, is laying on the floor, his limbs twisted horribly by Tumbala's attack, and he tries to send out a mental cry for help to the one person on the team who might hear, which turns out to be Nudge, with her telemagical whatever powers they are now, who, along with Rita, Cliff, and Vortex, are still trying to convince Henry Butcher's parents that the forearm gorilla grunt, now in their living room, really is their son. Yeah, that's a sentence I never thought I'd say out loud. Nudge suddenly cries out in pain as she receives the chief's message, and as the team is about to return to Kimordaz to investigate, Grunt decides that he will indeed stay with his parents. Touching. As the team fly back to the HQ, we're treated to everyone's favourite part of a Burn Doom Patrol comic. Yes, that's right, gang. It's time for another flashback.
Yay!
Because T'Umbala decides to tell Metamorpho and Sapphire exactly why he hates Niles so much. And it basically boils down to fear and jealousy. 20 years earlier, a young Niles Calder wandered into Chief T'Umbala's village and quickly won over the locals with his charm, facial hair. Yes, really. That was one of T'Umbala's sticking points, his facial hair.
Hey, don't knock it. It works.
Yeah, I know. I know. Hello, ladies. So, yes, his charm, his facial hair, and his modern medicine won over the villagers. Of course, T'Umbala wasn't going to stand for this nonsense, so he had a servant poison Niles' supplies, which ended up killing an infant. And this led to Calder being imprisoned by T'Umbala, who then spent the next 6 months shattering and resetting every bone in Niles' body as punishment, before eventually throwing the chief's damaged body into the sea. However, karma came and kicked T'Umbala hard when the servant repented her part in the poisoning to the village council, and so the strongest men in the village killed him and hurled his body into the pit that they use for the worst kind of refuge.
Uh-huh.
I think he means poop by that comment. Yeah. He deserves it anyway. As the rest of the patrol touch down back at the HQ, the flashback nanigans continue a-go-go as now Nudge is getting more visions from the chief, conveniently picking up from the point where he had been thrown into the sea. And we learn that he was picked up by a fishing trawler, taken back to the States. Doctors told him he'd never use his limbs again, him getting well and truly into the STEM studies, meeting up with that Vidalian guy that we last saw running illegal underground robot fighting rings in issues 5 and 6, which we covered in episode 114 back in December of 2017, deciding to build a robotic exoskeleton, then deciding to build a robotic body to transfer his brain into, which is where we learn that Robot Man was originally built to house the chief's brain.
No, I'm not even going to give you that one.
You know what? Wow. Anyway, Cliff Reader and Vortex head back into the base, and just as they realize the prisoners are free, they are then attacked by those same prisoners. And then Metamorpho joins the fight, and then Negative Man turns up to join the fight, and everyone is delighted to see he's put away the gimp mask and returned to the good old bandages and sunglasses look. Oh, and now the negative spirit appears to be its own sentient being.
Ah, okay.
All right. Yeah. Anyway, fight, fight, fight. The good guys get the upper hand, but just then T'Umbala enters the room and begins to do his flying voodoo work on Niles before a bayonet pierces through his chest from behind him. As he slumps to the ground in a fairly uncomfortable position, even for a ghost, we see the ghostly Confederate soldier Elihu brandishing the weapon, telling Nudge that he reckon he don't want... I'll say that bit again. So in response to the title of this issue, the way to kill a ghost is apparently use another ghost.
With a ghost bayonet.
Yes, exactly. A ghostly weapon to kill a ghost held by another ghost. Okay, what I liked about this issue, for a given value of like, is that Burn is starting to do a bit of his own world building and his own history building. So the callbacks to these mutant prisoners that have been locked up since issue 2, the callbacks to Vidalian, the guy who ended up running the robot fighting rings, and the reason why Niles was building a robot body. So that was kind of okay to me. It was like, okay, he's trying to do his own thing now. It's only taken him like 12 issues to get there. But, you know, even reusing the imprisoned mutants was okay by me. I mean, it gave them something to do and, you know, didn't require new villains being introduced who would then leave us with questions like, you know, who are the devolutionists?
Where are the devolutionists?
Yeah, just a few issues ago, you know, we still don't know who the heck they were. Some things that really bug me about this issue, he still uses Rita to explain the obvious.
Yes.
Like, we can, everyone can see that Elihu is the ghost of a Confederate soldier wearing a Confederate soldier's uniform, but Rita still has to say it out loud.
Yeah.
And, you know, when she's, when they're still with Henry / Grunt's parents, and saying how they can communicate with the four-armed gorilla, Rita has to tell everyone that, oh, me son is a functional telepath, you know, which seems like a really dumb way to prove that power. It's like, wouldn't me son say something like, think of a number,
yeah,
you know, or I can recall, you know, I can see your memories, or however her power. Yeah, you're right. Her, what is her power? You know, it just changes. It's just,
she can make people do things, but she can fly, and she can make,
yeah,
you know, shotguns slow down, and, you know. I don't get it.
Yeah, and a panel that really, really bugged me in this is that when the rest of the team get back to the HQ and they land the plane sort of near the water and Rita goes into giant mode, Byrne has decided to show her being in giant mode by having the panel sideways.
Yes.
So you have to kind of tilt your head to get, hey, that's a giant woman. Oh, but she's sideways, so it's not really that impressive. It just looks stupid.
Yes.
It's just like, of all the ways to lay out a page in a comic book to show off the impressive size of a giant woman, having her sideways in the bottom panel is a really dumb idea.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Rita's really been shortchanged in this comic and in this run. She literally is exposition person and occasional helping hand. Like, you know, she turns big and just catches people all the time and helps them out. And that's what she does.
Yeah.
But and she's super polite and super helpful and just explains things to people. Mm.
She's like Galaxy Quest. Gwen. Was it Gwen?
I can't remember if it's Gwen, but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, we're coming up on some radiation, Captain. Yes, I just said that, you know. So I was like, oh, God. Anyway, yeah. The good news is we only have about 3 more episodes of Byrne's run left to get through.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, what's the deal with the smart rat bit? That was...
You mean that one of the bits I glossed over?
Yeah, that bit. The bit you ignored.
Because there was that bit, and I also ignored the bit where Larry was having a conversation with the negative spirit. Because it was like, okay, it just happened. Mm. There's a one-pager where there's a rat with, like, microchips in its head learning to press which button will reward him.
Mm.
And it seems to happen in the space of, like, an hour and a half or something.
Yeah.
Between
11:47 and 3 p.m., this is... what happened in the comic?
Yeah. So it's look, it's maybe it's a callback to the Bruno Premiani Arnold Drake stuff where Niles was experimenting on animals then.
Well, maybe.
Back in volume one.
But that was good and this isn't.
I don't know if joining random animals together is a good thing ever, Paul.
That's foreshadowing about the chief.
I guess. But yes, this rat has a microchip in its head. It hits one buzz and gets electrocuted, hits another button, and it gets rewarded with food. So it's like, okay. I have no other explanation for that. I can't even recall, even though I've read this volume before, I can't even recall what that might even lead to. Yeah. And what a thrilling finale for Grunt. What a wonderful send-off that character had.
Yeah. Oh, So I just want to see the adventures of Grunt now living with his parents and, you know, four-armed gorilla, you know, going to school and going to the movies and, you know.
Yeah, but now, see, that would be interesting.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I have this terrible feeling we need to get out of this conversation about this comic as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think we're... I'm done doom-slating this one.
Yeah.
Afternoon, everybody.
Ryan!
How's that baby treating you, Mr. Daly?
Like Thanos, snapping his fingers at my bank account.
In that case, how about a beer on the house?
Sure, gotta give my mouth something to do between podcasts.
Say, Ryan, I don't get how you have so much time for podcasting. Doesn't your wife want you spending time with the baby?
Would you? truth is, I think she's a little worried about how much time I'm spending with the kid, ever since his first words were Dagobah system. Now she wants me to go out and do something mature, something productive, and most of all, something lucrative that can support the family.
So you're going to...
podcast about Cheers, yeah. That kid's not going to start college for 18 years. I got time. Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. Coming soon to the Fire and Water Network.
And now it's the part of the show that we call Mailbag O'Doom, which according to these notes is where we go through the mailbag of stuff to do with the Doom Patrol. And the most important part is that we cover the Question of the Week answers, which were this time, the Question of the Week that we asked people to respond to was, what's your best bargain comic find? And we heard from Sean Ross from Secret Wars and Beyond podcast, which is a fun podcast that I recommend you listen to if you want to hear how crazy Secret Wars 2 is at the moment with Greg Arujo. He said, I got issues 1 to 64 of Shadow of the Bat for $14.99. That was a pretty sweet deal. Bloody hell, that's
what, that is
64 comics. I wonder if it had the zero issue. No. Anyway, yeah, what a great deal.
Yeah, that is indeed a very sweet deal.
Yeah.
Sean, well done. Yeah. We then heard from Saul Bishop, who said he found a copy of Jimmy Olsen 134, which was Darkseid's first appearance. He found that at an antique store on the Oregon coast while on vacation 20 years ago for 50 cents.
Man, nice. That never happens in Australia, does it?
Never. Never. Never, ever.
Never, ever, never. Ever. We heard from Slang Word Resists, and they found a copy of New Gods number 1 in a quarter bin, and it was signed by Jack Kirby on the first page.
Wow.
Wow, bloody hell.
Christatos 01.
That's Pat.
Twitter's.
Pat Samson.
Pat? Yep. Pat Samson. Hello, Pat.
My best friend. Sorry.
Oh. Oh, right. Where'd you meet him?
HeroesCon.
Oh, right. Did you get a HeroesCon?
I did.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyway, Paul's best friend, Pat, said, I got issue 500 of The Adventures of Superman and was lucky enough to have it signed by a real awesome guy who has a letter to the editor in it, the one, the only, Reading _ Hicks. Oh, that's you, Paul.
Coincidentally, that is.
Oh, wow, there you go. You signed a comic. Right, right.
Yeah.
Humble as the day is long.
Yeah. we heard from Moby1 at Shmoby1, and he said, hoping this counts, my LCS gifted me a copy of the Crisis on Infinite Earths hardcover with the minor printing error back in the day. Stoked. Gifted. That was a huge hardcover. That was...
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Holy cow. I'd be stoked too. We then heard from Ange, Dr. Ange 70 on the Twitters, and he said he gave us two pictures of comics. Ironically, both misfiled in the dollar box and both involved Babs Batgirl. And it was Detective Comics, I think it's 371, and Birds of Prey 8.
Birds of Prey 8 is a super hot issue. That goes for like $80, that one.
Wow, really?
It's the Nightwing date with Babs issue.
Yes.
Very popular.
All right.
We heard from Martin Gray at Mart Gray, and he said, piles of Silver Age DC Comics prices to 100 for 50p at a jumble sale when I was a kid. I made a couple of trips and got about 600 comics. This would be about 1974.
Wow.
Wow.
Holy jeez.
Wow. I wasn't onto comics in 1974.
I wasn't alive in 1974.
Oh.
I wasn't even a twinkle in me fart. Yeah, never mind. Chris from BTO and Batbooks said, been lucky to have a few over the years. My most recent, a couple years ago at a flea market, I found Archie's Pals and Gals number 23, the first appearance of Josie, later of Josie and the Pussycats fame, in a box labeled All Comics $5 each. A tough find, even triple figure prices on eBay.
Whew. Wow.
Nicely done.
Yeah, well done.
Good Lord, yeah.
We heard from Jack Rocha, Old Fashioned Outlaw, and he said the complete series of the Kyle Baker Plastic Man run. So, but he didn't say how much he paid, but that is a sweet run. That was really good. And yeah, well done. Beautiful.
It went nice.
Beautiful covers and presentation on that series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love a bit of Kyle Baker's art. Yeah. Always good. Always good. Wilf Ish, at Wilf Ish on the Twitter, said he got Alias number one in excellent condition for 25 cents.
Wow.
The Jessica Jones stuff, isn't that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a key issue now.
Yeah. Well done, Will.
Well done. Ryan Daly also does the Cheerscast now. I got Amazing Spider-Man number one for less than $6 just yesterday. I think he's talking about a new comic.
Yeah, yeah. I think Spider-Man rebooted yet again. How unlike Marvel. Good Lord. Yeah, I think that's the one he means.
Yeah, I don't really care for your sarcastic answers, Ryan Daly.
Oh, he's so funny, Mr. Podcasting Man. Yeah. Jonathan Dye chipped in with, I found Next Men 21, which was the first Hellboy appearance, and Astro City Half, probably my absolutely favorite comic of all time, in the 50 cent bins.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that Next Men 21 is a hot issue. I used to have that, and I sold it.
Ooh. Did you make out like a bandit upon selling it, or
I made out like a petty criminal.
Okay, close enough. Yeah.
Made out like a teenager in a service station, lifting some chewy. Anyway, we heard from Clinton Robertson over on the Facebooks, and he said, I found a near mint issue of Sandman Mystery Theater in the quarter bin, and it was signed by Matt Wagner.
Oh, nice.
Sweet.
Nice. Wow.
And that's it.
Yeah. So, Paul, what's your best comic purchase bargain?
When I came up with this question, I didn't even think of an answer for myself. I think the closest I had, I ordered some comics on eBay, and they were not a bargain, but I got them. But they came with some other comics, like the person just filled up the extra space that the wait was paying for with extra comics. And one of those comics was Doom Patrol number... I can't remember the number, but it was the first appearance of Animal Vegetable Mineral Man as a bonus comic, which is the oldest comic that I own. It's not in great condition, but I was super stoked to have it, and it's a good one.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. What about you, Garth?
Well, I'm in the same boat as you. Because we live in Australia and we don't have 50 cent or quarter bins, you know, over here, we just don't. It's really hard to think of what would be considered a bargain over here. So the closest thing I guess would be a bargain, because I didn't even know this thing existed, was the DC Blue Ribbon Digest of the Doom Patrol that I got at Heroes Con a couple of years ago.
Did you go to Heroes Con?
I did. Yeah, a couple of years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't told you. Haven't mentioned it.
Never heard that before.
Oh, okay. So yes, and this reprinted four issues from the My Greatest Adventure run from the 60s, and it was published in 1981. So, and it's one of the DC Special Blue Ribbon Digests, you know. And actually, we'll always be thankful to our friend Matt Roberts, who actually found it earlier. And, you know, kind of tried to hide it amongst the other stuff on the seller's table there. Yeah. And luckily it was still there. So I snapped it up. It was $12, but I think for something I didn't even know that existed and is, you know, some of my favorite stories from the 60s run, I'm more than happy to pay $12 for it. So
wow.
It's a nice little addition to the collection, maybe not in purely a bargain, you know, but it made me happy. I love it. That's a cool little book.
More than enough. I can tell you a story about that comic.
Yeah?
I bought it on eBay one day, and it never arrived.
Oh.
So your story's better than mine.
Right. That is not a happy ending at all. No. Oh, my God. Right. Okay. Well, we've laughed, we've loved, we've suffered through more burn stuff. So, yeah, I think we might start signing off. Next week on the feed, we will be back with more DC OCD. And what will we be discussing on that episode, Paul?
We're doing Underworld Unleashed.
Ooh.
Which is a bloody good one.
Yeah.
Not spoilers.
Look, let the score just work out however it does, you know. And when we return in 2 weeks with more Waiting for Doom goodness, we will have a new question of the week. What is that question, Paul?
It is, who's your favourite comic character who has switched from villain to hero or vice versa?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thinking caps on for that one.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, if you want to get in touch with us, say hello to Wilfred on Twitter at WFDpod, or you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also check out the Waiting for Doom Facebook page or the excellent related posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, thanks to our fellow Doom bro, Doug Zavisha. And if you're so inclined, maybe throw us an iTunes review, you know, score yourself a snazzy postcard.
Yeah. You
know? Just saying, just putting it out there in the universe. You know?
I'm just going to say there's not many of them left, so the pile is getting short, and they're going to be out of stock soon. So
yeah, they are extremely limited edition, you know.
Mm.
Once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
And who knows what happens after that? You just won't be cool. That's what will happen. So I'm trying too hard to sell this thing, aren't I? Anyway, that's us for another episode of Waiting for Doom. Thank you again, Paul.
Thank you, Mike.
And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
Ugh.